From a purely tactical viewpoint, I can see the superficial appeal of Roos's comparison with the fight against Hitler.
Winston Churchill and Franklin Roosevelt did not like Stalin and communism, but in fighting Hitler, they realized that they had to work with the Soviet Union. Evolutionists of all kinds must likewise work together to fight creationism.
But I finally come down on the side of my colleague, the Chicago geneticist Jerry Coyne, who wrote that Roos
fails to grasp the real nature of the conflict. It's not just about evolution versus creationism. To scientists like Dawkins and Wilson, E.O. Wilson, the celebrated Harvard biologist, the real war is between rationalism and superstition. Science is but one form of rationalism, while religion is the most common form of superstition. Creationism is just a symptom of what they see as the greater enemy, religion. While religion can exist without creationism, creationism cannot exist without religion.
I do have one thing in common with the creationists. Like me, but unlike the Chamberlain School, they will have no truck with Noma and its separate magisteria. Far from respecting the separateness of science's turf, creationists like nothing better than to trample their dirty hobnails all over it. And they fight dirty too. Lawyers for creationists in court cases around the American boondocks seek out evolutionists who are openly atheists. I know, to my chagrin, that my name has been used in this way. It is an effective tactic because juries selected at random are likely to include individuals brought up to believe that atheists are demons incarnate, on a par with paedophiles or terrorists, today's equivalent of Salem's witches and McCarthy's commies. Any creationist lawyer who got me on the stand could instantly win over the jury simply by asking me, "Has your knowledge of evolution influenced you in the direction of becoming an atheist?" I would have to answer yes, and at one stroke I would have lost the jury. By contrast, the judicially correct answer from the secularist side would be, "My religious beliefs or lack of them are a private matter, neither the business of this court nor connected in any way with my science." I couldn't honestly say this, for reasons I shall explain in Chapter 4. The Guardian journalist Madeline Bunting wrote an article entitled "Why the Intelligent Design Lobby Thanks God for Richard Dawkins." There's no indication that she consulted anybody except Michael Roos, and her article might as well have been ghostwritten by him. Dan Dennett replied, aptly quoting Uncle Remus,
"I find it amusing that two Brits, Madeline Bunting and Michael Roos, have fallen for a version of one of the most famous scams in American folklore, Why the Intelligent Design Lobby Thanks God for Richard Dawkins, March 27th. When Br'er Rabbit gets caught by the fox, he pleads with him, "Oh, please, please, Br'er Fox, whatever you do, don't throw me in that awful briar patch," where he ends up safe and sound after the fox does just that. When the American propagandist William Dembski writes tauntingly to Richard Dawkins, telling him to keep up the good work on behalf of intelligent design, Bunting and Roos fall for it. "Oh, golly, Br'er Fox, your forthright assertion that evolutionary biology disproves the idea of a creator god jeopardizes the teaching of biology in science class, since teaching that would violate the separation of church and state." Right. You also ought to soft-pedal physiology, since it declares virgin birth impossible.
This whole issue, including an independent invocation of Br'er Rabbit in the briar patch, is well discussed by the biologist P.Z. Myers, whose pharyngular blog can reliably be consulted for trenchant good sense. I'm not suggesting that my colleagues of the appeasement lobby are necessarily dishonest. They may sincerely believe in Noma, although I can't help wondering how thoroughly they've thought it through, and how they reconcile the internal conflicts in their minds. There's no need to pursue the matter for the moment, but anyone seeking to understand the published statements of scientists on religious matters would do well not to forget the political context, the surreal culture wars now rending America. Noma-style appeasement will surface again in a later chapter. Here, I return to agnosticism and the possibility of chipping away at our ignorance and measurably reducing our uncertainty about the existence or non-existence of God.
Little Green Men. Suppose Bertrand Russell's parable had concerned not a teapot in outer space, but life in outer space. the subject of Sagan's memorable refusal to think with his gut. Once again, we cannot disprove it, and the only strictly rational stance is agnosticism. But the hypothesis is no longer frivolous. We don't immediately scent extreme improbability. We can have an interesting argument based on incomplete evidence, and we can write down the kind of evidence that would decrease our uncertainty.